In non-democratic societies, I think what's important is to ensure that there is space for civil society and social movements to organise. And I suppose in supposedly democratic societies, we need more checks and balances on power.
Welcome to Voices of Dignity, a UN Human Rights podcast series. I'm Kayloy Henry from UN Human Rights. Over the next few weeks, we bring you in-depth conversations with thought leaders and experts looking at human rights issues and the future of human rights. In this episode, we discuss attitudes towards human rights and pathways to justice with Eleanor Kennedy from the Open Society Foundation. Stay tuned. Everywhere you look, it seems as though rights are under threat and being rolled back, reproductive rights via legislation in countries. But all is not dire. A recent report called Democracy Can Deliver by the Open Society Foundation found that when it comes to human rights, people still feel and see it as a force for good. Speaking with more than 30,000 people from across the globe, the Open Society Barometer looked at attitudes towards rights and the way society is currently working. Eleanor Kennedy, senior policy expert from the foundation, spoke to us about the report and some of its findings.
For anyone who doesn't know, OSF's raison d'etre is the promotion of civil society and democracy around the world. And I think we wanted to check in, given all of the developments, you know, kind of global shifts over the past couple of years, that the concept of democracy was still something that people were signed up to, invested in. Generally speaking, we found kind of there were sort of shifting views on whether democracy was actually delivering for people. Some people really felt actually that autocratic leaders potentially could do more to ensure that people's basic needs were being met. So that was something that was slightly worrying for OSF, given our investment in democracy, our commitment to it. But it's something that we will learn from. It's something we'll research. However, on the plus side, we saw 70% of the people that we interviewed identified with, supported the concept of human rights, felt that human rights reflected the values that they held, and felt that the human right, you know, if human rights were being delivered effectively, that was the kind of world they wanted to be in.
When you were putting this report together, give me some statistics. I mean, how many people did you speak to? What countries? I mean, how did this happen?
We spoke to 36,000 people from across 30 countries around the world, from all continents, a couple of countries from each region. And the demographics were generally kind of seeking to be a cross-section of the population, old, young, you know, everybody, basically. It's the first time OSF have done something like this. It's kind of flagship report for us. And we were surprised at how much public media interest it got. Lots of people found the statistics both useful for their own advocacy work, interesting, and have used them in, you know, in different fora. And we're hoping to do something similar next year.
What were some of the things that you found? What were some of the surprising findings in the report?
I guess one thing that was surprising and particularly pertinent for the celebration of the UDHR was whilst people were invested in the values that the human rights framework promotes, they weren't necessarily sure about whether they were being delivered and the means through which, you know, there wasn't consensus around how we should deliver rights. So, you know, as I say, some people weren't necessarily signed up to the idea of democracy. That challenges some of our understanding of how and where we think human rights should be delivered. And it potentially calls into question, you know, the economic models that are being used to deliver human rights. So that's something that we need to look a bit more into.
But there was also some very good news with regards to human rights. At most, there was like, 71% people said that, you know, they still believe in human rights as being a force for good. Mm-hmm. It seems like there's a bit of a dichotomy. I mean, on the one hand, you keep hearing that human rights are under threat, you know, human rights are going rolling backwards, blah, blah, blah. And yet there is still this hope within populations about human rights. How do you explain this dichotomy? And you know, is there anything that we could be do to capitalize on it or to work with it?
Yeah, I think it's a false premise that human rights are dead. And I think that that's to some extent being promulgated by naysayers, people who've kind of given up on frameworks, and also, to be honest, people who are existing outside of the places where human rights are really kind of at a crunch point. You know, there was a report produced this year actually by an academic called Jeff Dancy who looked at where the term human rights was being most widely Googled. And we found that it was being most Googled in countries where human rights were under attack. What that says to us is it's not up for people sitting in the halls of Geneva, the halls of, you know, academic institutions to say human rights are dead, human rights don't work, if populations who are experiencing human rights abuses are looking to human rights frameworks for their, you know, for their utility, for their support. And so I think actually it's an unhelpful narrative to put out that they're dead. Actually, plenty of populations around the world are utilizing the themes, the structures, the tools that exist under human rights to access their rights, to find a recourse to justice. And that's what we should be taking account of and looking at where they've been successful and why.
One of the things was said that democracy is shown to be better, but it has to be shown to deliver better and concrete solutions. So what are some of the ways that democracy can do this?
Great question and a challenging question. And I think part of the reason why that's pertinent is we have seen a backsliding on human rights in countries that are ostensibly democracies. You know, if we look at the US, if we look at what's been happening to women's rights, women's bodily autonomy within the US, equally the UK, where I'm from, if we look at what's happening on migrant rights within the UK, the threat of sending some of our refugees to Rwanda to, you know, seek asylum there. So I think we shouldn't take it for granted that just because you have supposedly a fully functioning democracy that human rights are being delivered within those contexts. That's one thing to think about. I think there are a couple of ways to ensure that human rights can be delivered. In non-democratic societies, I think, you know, what's important is to ensure that there is space for civil society and social movements to organize. And I suppose in supposedly democratic societies, we need more checks and balances on power. You know, things like citizens' assemblies, we've seen those to be quite effective in some of the countries where they're being utilized, where actually, you know, populations are allowed to vote on matters that directly affect them at a local level, community level, regional level.
Are human rights still important?
Absolutely, 100%. And actually being here this week in Geneva, you know, seeing lots of delegations of human rights defenders, human rights activists, people whose human rights are being, you know, brutally abused, they're coming to these halls to say human rights are important and actually we need you as states, as institutions like, you know, the UN to be doing more for us.
One of the things that has been a focus of our year-long look at human rights has been, you know, what human rights should look like in the future, reimagining human rights. So putting on your crystal ball and your divination hat, what do you see in the future? I mean, if you do this report again in 25 years in time for UDHR 100, what would you expect to find? What kind of statistics would you come?
I think there are maybe three or four key areas where the human rights framework hasn't necessarily caught up with global developments. One of them is climate change. We need to have a look at how human rights mechanisms and framings can help to deliver justice for communities affected by climate change. There are some, you know, movements that are already happening, but I have found that the climate space is very siloed from the human rights space. And actually, you know, if you're being displaced for climate-related issues, that's a human rights issue. That completely undermines the right to life, the right to a healthy environment. And so we need to think about how to adapt the human rights framework and rhetoric to ensure that climate change is properly considered. That's one area. Another area, you know, it's a hot topic at the moment, but how do we ensure that there is a human rights framework being applied to AI and the use of new digital technologies? And not just to mitigate the harms, but also to ensure that those digital technologies are accessible to everybody, everywhere. We need to be looking at how to work with some of the big tech companies who are developing this technology to ensure that human rights activists can utilize that kind of technology for good, you know, for social purposes rather than just for profit making. Another area that I think is, it's a challenging one, but needs to be looked at more seriously are social and economic rights, you know. Technically, they are part of the UDHR, but I think that there's a lot of focus on civil and political rights and less of an understanding of how you utilize, again, human rights frameworks and mechanisms to deliver economic and social justice for populations everywhere. You have people that are focused on the economy and you have people that are focused on human rights, and they don't often meet. Actually, we need more economists working on human rights and more human rights professionals working on the economy. At Open Society, we're very much behind the movement for reparations and looking at how there are financial methods of compensation that can affect historically marginalized and oppressed populations. And I think until those mechanisms, those kind of financial reparations are being put in place, it's going to be hard to ensure that human rights are being properly realized everywhere.
There's a quote from the report that basically says, you can't eat democracy, that the government must appeal to more than just the abstract. Given what you've just said, looking into the future, are you hopeful? I mean, do you think people will, you know, get past not eating democracy and getting more concrete?
We have new leaders from the global south, women of color coming through at a global level, who are having more of a role in shaping the global agenda on tax, on climate change, on human rights. And I think that is a cause for hope. You know, I think the global order needs to be shaken up. The halls of power need to see different voices who have got lived experience of what it means to live in a small island developing state, who've got lived experience of knowing what it feels like if your homeland is potentially going to be sinking in the next couple of years. Those are the voices that we need to hear in Geneva, in New York, and in other fora that aren't so focused on Geneva and New York. So that's what gives me hope.
Eleanor Kennedy, thank you so very much.
Well, we've come to the end of this episode of Voices of Dignity, looking at pathways to justice. I want to thank Eleanor Kennedy from the Open Society Foundation for that fascinating discussion. If you want to learn more about human rights and some of the solutions they can offer, then please go to our website, www.ohchr.org. Next time, we learn more about the voices of change with UN Special Rapporteur on the Right to Education, Farida Shaheed. I'm Kayloy Henry. Thanks for listening.